Oh, wow. All right. So I guess we had some technical difficulties, like always. My Rodecaster busted in the pre-show testing. So we're 5 minutes late. I guess we're live. Let me look. Yeah, it looks like we're live on Spaces. Going to tweet that out. Where else are we live? We're live on YouTube. We're live on Twitter Live. Yeah, it's episode 61 of Wreck Radio with Zed from Magic Eden here. I don't know, Osef, do you want to get into to your job here, if you remember today?
Yeah. as you guys know, this show is sponsored by Rollbit, so check out rollbit.com. We'll have two codes to give away, and we will do a loot box spin at the end of the show as well. So the first code is MagicEden41. MagicEden41 is the first code. And remember, if you want to watch this on video, just check out the stream on YouTube or Twitter.
Yeah, we got a different time today, noon Eastern. I wonder if we got the same folks. Maybe we'll get a different batch of people winning some loot today. But I don't know. What's good, guys? How are things going? It's full-fledged bull market out there.
Full-fledged.
1999 vibes for semis in the stock market. Send it.
But .com bubble, baby.
Have you seen fucking like an NVIDIA, SMCI, or ARM Holdings? I mean, like,
shit's wild. NVIDIA overtook Amazon, I saw this week.
Popping the fuck off in the semi land. Yeah. Sure.
I have not been following traditional. I've just been following crypto, but crypto is just fucking
playing some catch up.
500, 600 million of inflows every single day. OSF calling for 100K Bitcoin in the next week. It's really been,
you might. I saw that yesterday. That was pretty, it's pretty bullish, dude.
Next week.
What's going on there?
Not wait, next week. I said by the end of H1, maybe Q1.
Yeah.
You want to say the end of Q1? Yeah. Pretty soon.
but the ETF inflows have been wild, and I think there's going to be a billion dollar net inflow today, by the way, looking at someone was sending me the numbers earlier today. So yeah, it's just going to keep going.
Who's sending you these numbers?
Just got sources, mate.
Yeah.
Check out
that you're like best mates with Eric Balcunes, the Bloomberg analyst. So like,
check out this beer I've got today.
It's a little unfocused. Okay. It's backwards because it's a mirror.
What does it say?
It says kind of apple.
Apple strudel with custard, pale ale.
What? Where'd you find that?
I mean, it's an upgrade over warm whiskey. Let's be real.
Yeah.
He was off the rails the other day.
He was hammered. He actually texted me afterwards and said like, I'm sorry. I don't know what I was doing. Like, I was so fucking hammered. I was like, yeah, I don't think anyone noticed, man. Everyone noticed. Yeah.
Damn. Good stuff. Good stuff. Love that. So I mean, like, well, what have you guys been doing? What are you trading? I don't know. I mean,
what are we all doing for Valentine's Day? You doing anything?
Happy Valentine's Day.
Everyone's gone.
Zed, are you a single man, or are you?
I was gonna actually start this by wishing the boys here happy Valentine's Day, but we just got into shop. We got into shop talk too quickly, you know. immediately.
I wore red. And as the interview goes on, I'm aggressively undo buttons.
I was gonna say you look like it's really starting to come off a little bit. I don't know.
One more.
I like that.
I pretty quiet one on my side. I'm married, so I have this thing where I started this in like 2018, where I don't buy my wife flowers anymore. I just give her some ETH, and it's sick.
Oh,
because it's just more valuable, you know. ETH ultimately doesn't die.
Has she got a kick in the background, or is she just like really pissed when you do that?
Well, at the beginning she was really pissed. Yeah, she was.
Sounds
just
like you're buying yourself a gift.
But now she's into it. Yeah, because it's been you know 5 years of it, so it's worked out.
Yeah, definitely.
Where was ETH 5 years ago? I guess it.
Oh fuck! It was. I don't know if you guys remember. It was sometime in 2019. It hit like 75.
Wow. Jeez. No, we were. Yeah. I was not in and around. Me and OSF were kind of late into crypto, 2021, or 2020, depending on who you ask. But we missed that 2020, 2019, like bull run. ABM was around.
No, I started in 2017, but I mean, like, got zeroed out in crypto a couple times from then to get into 2021. I think the last zero out was during the BitMEX collapse when it went to like 3,000 Bitcoin. Something in one day. And I fucking levered up the shit out of it, like 4,600, and got licked, and then it halted and gapped up like 6,000. Like the trade stopped. It was wild. I was disappointed, but that was only like 300 grand. So it's okay. Made it out of there alive. Crazy days. Now we're on to easy days where people just buy and it goes up every day. We got the billions of dollars in flows. You love to see it. I don't know.
So yeah, that's maybe get into your background. So you clearly been in the crypto space for a while. Like when did you first start dancing crypto circles?
Started dancing crypto circles in late 2017. So I got in that cycle and similarly got kind of wrecked after that cycle because
those are the good ICOs.
Absolute ICOs. Top. Yeah, I came in at the absolute freaking top. I joined DYDX. So for those out there that are big Perp lovers, that was my entry into crypto. Yeah, I was a second employee at DYDX, and I was just as soon as I heard what they were doing, Antonio, shout out to Antonio, who's the founder, I was like, man, this shit's gonna be fire, you know. So I ended up joining them, and it was a bit of a punt, you know. Like back then, it wasn't very clear what all this was gonna be, because it was KVM was just, it was all just ICOs, right? End of 2017, there really wasn't anything going on. But I just felt like if something were to work out, it could be pretty transformative. So took the punt, ended up joining this very early team, DYDX. We built for a few years and was both lucky and unlucky to see the very, very dire markets of 2018 and 2019, where ETH went down to 75 and Bitcoin went to 3,000. And it was pretty brutal. I remember we used to celebrate days where we had like 30 or 40 users, which was like far, far cry from today. And then spent like almost 3 years there. And this was in around 2020. Ended up going to Coinbase for a year and a half. I worked as a PM on the trading team. We were building these like trading products for institutions, which was actually a pretty exciting time because I don't know if you guys remember in 2021, like late 2021, there was kind of that instos are here narrative. To some degree, I think we're still having it, but it's like now in the form of an ETF. But back then it was like instos are buying Bitcoin, like buying and holding Bitcoin. And we were helping a lot of those instos come into the market. So I was building a lot of the trading products, like the smart order routing products, trading algos, all that kind of stuff for Coinbase. And then, fast forward a little bit longer, started Magic Eden. So it's been a journey, man. I've seen crypto from a few sides now. I get a lot more gray hairs after the years.
But you, to be clear though, you're a dev background. You didn't come this as a trader. I know you started with trading star products, or what's your background?
No, I'm not a dev. Yeah, I loved finance. I studied finance, worked in finance for a while, and then that's how I got into DYDX. Because like when I heard the mission, they were trying to make, the original mission was to do decentralized derivatives, but on chain, and I was like, holy shit, that is like. That's the biggest market of all markets, right? Derivatives is just, the notional value is insane. It's huge. So I loved finance and that's how I got into it. And then learned all the tech stuff like as I went along.
So, but then how are you employee number two? Like, how did you get that look as being employee number two at DYDX? If you're you just like the space. So he was like,
a great friend. Like, fuck it. I'll take this guy.
You know, to be honest.
Talent pool is small. Like,
I was gonna say it was probably just like fuck, no one wanted to join, so
it was just like crap. He likes finance. Okay, cool.
Yeah, this sucker is keen enough to join. No, I think basically the team was, it was Antonio and this other guy Brendan, who's still there by the way. He was like one of the original protocol engineer, and I think they just needed someone who could come and build out all the other parts of the business, right? Like all the go-to-market of the business, partnerships, the business. Like I signed our first like market making deals when I was at DYDX. If, I don't know if you guys even remember this, but we built like some leverage trading, like leverage trading tokens first up, then we did margin trading, then we did perps. Perps was actually like the third iteration of the company. And but all through that, we were trying to work with market makers, trying to find like traders who are trading on centralized exchanges to come and trade on DYDX, all that kind of stuff, right? It takes a whole lot to kind of put a new trading product onto the market. Like, it's one thing to obviously build the protocols and like that's a ton of work, but to get it distributed, get users on it, get liquidity on it, that cold start problem is really real. That's why, like, it's the same problem like NFT marketplaces, you know. It's ultimately the same thing, right? Liquidity problem, got to get the supply, get the content, then there are buy side users, all this kind of stuff. So that was kind of the role originally, but man, back then it was a bit of everything. I probably did some recruiting. I did some, I did all kinds of shit. You know, it was kind of like whatever was needed at the time.
What I find interesting is that DYDX is kind of ETH based. And then like, how did you then move into Magic Eden, which feels like one of the cornerstones of Solana ecosystem when like I remember it coming up. Maybe give us some background on how that all started.
Yeah. Like I definitely grew up in crypto on Ethereum, and I think my history of activity will show that too. But I just felt like I've never really been someone that's been like really maximalist about something. I'm very much like I just like crypto. It's just sick. You know, if you can do cool things, like I'm happy to try it out. That's why it's just really fascinating now as well, how much stuff is happening on all the different chains. And it's important, I think, to make sure you dabble in all of it, versus being sort of siloed in one ecosystem. But how it all kind of got going was, I was actually with one of my co-founders, we were actually just yield farming together on the side. This was in 2020 or something, right? Late 2020. And it was an absolute pico of yield farming, right? It was like, even like Avalanche, there was like yield farming there. It was like Pengu Finance or some stupid thing like that. And like, there was a bunch of stuff on Sol, like Radium. There's all these like Sol coins launching, right? Bonfida and like Serum and all these different things. So we were just dabbling around in it. And there were two catalysts for me. One was the user experience was actually just really good. We're like, shit, you can do a lot. It's really cheap. And why wouldn't we give this a go? And the second thing was, we then I was like pretty good friends with the guys that end up starting Phantom, the wallet. Mm-hmm. And when they started Phantom, I was like, "Yo, like what's going on here?" And we kind of talked about it. They were pretty bullish on the Solana ecosystem, and at the time there was maybe one NFT marketplace that wasn't very good. So we thought to ourselves, maybe we can give this a crack. You know, let's see what we can do here, because if you believe that different kinds of content and creators and different use cases can emerge when you have this kind of like base level infrastructure that's like just fundamentally different to Ethereum, maybe some different shit's going to happen, right? It wasn't like a super giga like well-formed thesis. I almost think like it's hard to do that in crypto, right? You just kind of got to see what's in front of you and then act upon that. And that's exactly what we did. We just felt like there was probably something here, couldn't exactly describe it, but let's give it a crack. And we have the backgrounds, I think, to give it a good go. So that's the sort of origin story. And things kind of moved pretty quickly. I think within two, three weeks, we were quitting our jobs and doing this full time.
What date was that then?
That was probably September of
21. September of 21. Wow. We'd actually been in the market then. Like, it's crazy how quickly that ascent was. That is a really remarkable period. I remember it coming up, and like you said, right time, right place. I agree with you that sometimes you just got to jump at those things when they're like in front of you. It doesn't have to be like a top down thing. You just know when it's right, and you just think like, oh yeah, this is gonna be big. So who was the team that you started it with?
Yeah, the original team. So we have four founders. Myself, Jack, Sid, and Rex. So there's four of us. And then we actually, this might have been on like day two or something, day three, we started this Discord of, yeah, just like a small community, like, you know, hey, we're building this NFT marketplace. We'd love people to like try and test it out. And we had this one very particular passionate person in our Discord. And he was like, hey, can I come work for you guys? I love what you guys are doing. So we hired him. He's still at the company today. It's Chartfu Monkey. Those, you guys have probably, yeah, people have probably seen him pop up on Twitter here and there. Yeah, Chartfu joined us like very, very early. And then we had another person, Tiff, who joined also really, really early to lead kind of a bunch of things on our go-to-market side. And that's kind of the core team, you know. It was six, seven of us started going, and it was very, just very all hands on deck, because back then it was crazy, man. Like, I would almost describe it like, I don't know if people have experienced ordinals in the last 12 months, but it was kind of like that, you know. Things were really hard. Like, there was nothing on chain that could determine what was a collection, like what we call a collection ID now. Like, that didn't even exist. So everything we did was extremely manual, but the market validated itself really quickly, right? People clearly wanted, to do a bunch of stuff on Sol. That's still true today. It's gone through some ups and downs, but fundamentally, it's still very, very solid. And that was the original team. Yeah, none of us really came from, I guess, you know, we were relatively early in the Sol ecosystem, but none of us really came from the Sol ecosystem per se. But I think that's actually important. It's like, you don't go in with some dogmatic views, right? It's kind of like, just play the field on its own merits. And we felt like, let's lean into some of the stuff that Sol can do that ETH can't. And that's why you saw, like, we built a launch pad. We built this thing that allowed creators to just launch a bunch of shit really quickly. We enabled like really, really fast listing of collections, things like that. So that was the original team. And now we've kind of built a whole bunch of things across different chains and sort of see the market a bit differently now. But fundamentally, it's I mean, we're just excited as we were back then, because now the opportunity is just even bigger. Like, crypto's here to stay, NFT's here to stay. Just pumped about it.
Yeah, I remember that time. And I remember Solana NFTs at that time, and they were always like, you saw NFTs start to go on other chains and no one really knew what was going to last. I can only imagine that first, as any founder of a first 12 months of a company, like, you wonder whether it's actually going to work. And Solana, like, after the whole FTX stuff, and it must have been like an insane first 12 months. And I even remember during that time, you did kind of move. I remember even speaking to OSF about it. Like, you were often quick to move to other narratives. And I didn't know if that was like sort of like, stability, or if it was like it was dangerous for you as a marketplace. Obviously, OpenSea saw like the vast majority of overall NFT volumes, even though Solana was doing that. So yeah, maybe walk us through like how close did you guys come to issues? Like, what were those first 12 months like from a setup standpoint?
First 12 months were crazy, but I would say crazy for two reasons. One was that the market was ripping, right? So we didn't have the people to do all the things. A lot goes on behind the scenes to run a marketplace. Like, there's a lot of like trust and safety, you know, taking down like fakes and things like that, verifications, customer support, like all that stuff we just didn't really have, but we're kind of just like doing it on the fly. So I'd say that was like one really big challenge. The other big challenge was you just get bad. I mean, it's the same in anything in crypto, right? You get bad actors trying to do stuff, and it's just difficult to manage. I mean, we had one very long, painful incident. Was we had like a very high profile collection rug on our launch pad. I don't know if people remember this. Yeah, Nando, you're nodding. All right, yeah, you remember this.
What was it again?
I remember this. We got a lot of flack for that. I remember, like, it was like,
Oh, I remember that. Yeah,
you guys remember that?
Yeah. What was it?
Don't make me say the. Don't make me say the word.
You gotta say it.
What is it?
Balloonsville.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure we did a daily show during that period. We must have gone for you then, like, for sure.
I'm sure. I was probably just like, oh shit, like, just stop talking about this. Oh god, shit. Oh my god.
Tweet.
Dude,
5,000.
2 years ago. Two years ago now. February 2022. Jesus.
Wow.
I do remember the famous Magic Eden launch pad, because at that time, like, launch pads, they're always difficult because you don't know if you're getting negatively selected by the projects that want to use a launch pad. Like, it's always very difficult to work it out. But I remember this 100%.
Yeah. Wow. I can't believe how quickly you guys pulled this up. That's
our intern. Shout out to Rekt Intern. Yeah.
Man, Rekt Intern. Bravo, man. Bravo.
did I see FTX at the end of that? Was FTX involved? Was SBF? Did he get involved in this club? It says.
Who knows? But that was like, man, that was wild. That was, I remember. We did like a Twitter space for 6 hours and we just got yelled at for like five of those 6 hours, you know. But that, you know, it's we own up to it. That's something, you know, we have this thing now where one of our internal sort of mantras, I guess you could so to speak, is like, yeah, it's like user obsession. But a lot of companies say that in like a way that is kind of trite or like obvious. It's like, of course you should like talk to your users and do this, do that, but it's like, oh, when shit gets hard, are you gonna stand up and do the right thing for your users, right? And that was one of those days where I feel like as a company we grew leaps and bounds, even though that was an extremely hard thing to do, really hard day, painful. I mean, I personally thought maybe the company was dead. Like, that's honestly how it felt, right? Like, blood, sweat and tears had gone into this thing for we're working, 18, 19 hours a day kind of thing for 4 or 5 months. But it comes out and it shows sort of what we stand for. And we really just wanted our users to feel, to get righted there. And we ended up like, we didn't have to do this, but we paid the money back. We stopped Launchpad for a little while, got a bunch of shit sorted, trust and safety wise. And then brought it back when we were ready, but very painful. You know, these are the kind of like war stories, you know what I mean? Like, it's hard to explain them, but you got to live them. And once you live them, then you can, it's etched into the company's memory and something we still talk about, especially when we're trying to make decisions on like, what is the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do.
Well, yeah, like, makes sense.
We're not doing Balloonsville, basically. That's
No Balloonsville.
It's not moose shit. Move fast and break things. It's just, don't do Balloonsville again.
Just don't do that again, and don't mention it on the show, because it just gets pulled up by Rekt Intern, you know.
Yeah, exactly. He'll get you quick. So obviously that was the dark days. I can imagine. I remember that period, and I remember the flat you got for the launch pad. But then things really, and then that was before FTX, right? That was even before the whole FTX thing happened. So maybe go through that period as well. Like, what was that like?
So that was maybe 10 months before FTX. FTX, I guess, was in November. Was it November of 22?
Yeah, I think it was earlier, like September, October time, I think.
Okay, yeah. It's all very blurry now. But yes, that period was really interesting. Not in like it was definitely bad for the whole ecosystem as a whole. And I do think that as a Solana NFT marketplace at the time, we a lot of people were calling us going like, are you guys okay? But one thing that I feel like maybe is not communicated enough was that, man, the Solana community was very strong, and it stayed very strong over the succeeding months, right? Not in the sense of like, obviously a lot of liquidity was sucked out of the market, but I think that was just true in general with crypto. Like, so much liquidity was just sucked out. People were just burned for a little while. But one of the things, I can't remember who I said this to at the time, but someone was asking me like, what did it feel like in the Solana ecosystem? What did it feel like to just continue building there? And I said that it felt a lot like Ethereum's ecosystem in 2018, when Back then, there was no like really any dApps. It was like 15 dudes building some esoteric financial protocols, mm-hmm. right? And everyone was like, "Oh, ETH is it's dead. Like, who's gonna care about this?" But you had some like really tribal people that were like, "Nah, ETH is money." I don't know if you remember. There was like a whole meme, "ETH is money," and it felt like that. You know, it felt like a lot like that. And the reason I bring that up is because that to me is actually what I consider that like a healthy. If you can exhibit that within an ecosystem in a really, really bad time, that's actually really fucking bullish. And you don't see that very often. You see sort of like the hype and the tourists come into certain, like lots of ecosystems when things are like going really well, but do you see the core group of people that stay when things are hard? And that's really true of Solana, still true today, but really, really true. And I think that's what it felt like. Definitely very hard from like a broader market perspective because lots of liquidity kind of dried up. There was less like NFT activity, less trading activity on fundables, just less of everything. But like I've been through 2018, 2019. I was kind of like, man, there's more than 30 users here, so it's way more bullish than that. It gives us a good 18 months, 2 years to get a lot of our foundations right, and that's when we started just continuing to invest in Sol. We built Ordinals like 3 or 4 months later, right? In probably the hardest period of Magic Eden to make that kind of investment, but we did it. And then we started building out a whole bunch of other things around cross-chain infrastructure, doing deals with different creators. So we kind of use it as just like a period to just get a lot of things done that you otherwise can't really do in a crazy, crazy bull market.
Yeah. So what do you think of that? I mean, the big elephant in the room when you started was OpenSea. Now that's had a move in Blur, obviously up there. Like how do you see Magic Eden being different to all the other, I remember there's always marketplaces. That's everyone's true, trying to move marketplace. Like what are the main things for people for Magic Eden? Cause I know there's been some big announcements recently, but it's more than that. It feels like you do more than that.
Yeah. Yeah. A couple of things. One is, We've had this fundamental thesis that NFTs should not be a chain by chain concept. And it obviously feels like that a lot of the time today. But I think, you know, if you look at how people think about fungible tokens, you don't necessarily think about it as like, here are some really, you know, really niche, like chain specific coins. Maybe if you're getting really deep into some like meme coin kind of thing, like meme coin meta on Sol, maybe like that is a situation where you would. But in general, it's kind of like, it's just a bunch of fungibles. Yeah, different narratives, different reasons to trade. I feel the same way about NFTs in that like it's already starting to feel like the specific sort of really, really chain level stuff. It's just one giant ecosystem. And I'll tell you why I feel that way. It's because if I look at the users that are using Ordinals on Magic Eden, for example, it is like a lot of Ethereum people, mm-hmm. a lot. And if you look at the run up of Sol in December and January, who were those people? It was also a lot of Ethereum people. And so the movements now are just a lot simpler. So we feel that a lot of this should just be on a single platform that's very, very seamless. And we have this, we're building towards that future. So we have Ordinals, Sol, Polygon, and then we're launching our Ethereum marketplace in like 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks. So it's the only NFT marketplace that will have all of these things. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that we've recently launched a wallet as well, Magic Eden wallet, also a cross-chain wallet, supports the same chains that we have our marketplace on. And the whole purpose of that is that it should not be a really disjointed experience where to access Ordinals, ETH NFTs, Sol NFTs, whatever, you shouldn't need like 4 different wallets. Just need one. Mm-hmm. It should be just seamless. And then when you're in that wallet, if you want to get some Bitcoin so you can buy like OMBs, right? Or whatever, dude, Node Monkeys or something.
We had Ordinals people on here a couple months ago. We all agreed we should buy Ordinals. None of us really knew how.
Yeah.
Like, I was about to dig in and then I classically did.
Yeah, it's been
make money.
We need a wallet. It's maybe it was so difficult.
I had stuff
at that time, but it was I know the other two on this show did not.
I probably would have made money, right? I don't know.
Depends what you bought.
Depends. Yeah, it depends. We're really bullish on Ordinals in general. I think it's kind of the first time that like actual like really interesting ecosystem activity, like new use cases building on Bitcoin. It's reinvigorated like all this stuff around like people trying to do Bitcoin L2s now. It's sick. We've generated a lot of money for miners as well through our Ordinals marketplace, which we love, because if that helps to if that helps in any way to keep the network decentralized and keep it running, that's an awesome side effect, right? But anyway, cross-chain wallet, really easy to get started, because if you have ETH or SOL, get the wallet, you can just swap it to Bitcoin immediately, and then you can just start doing stuff on the Ordinal marketplace, right? Or vice versa, like whichever direction you want to go. But that's basically the very high level thesis, that we are already seeing kind of like more expensive NFTs land on Bitcoin. We are already seeing kind of like larger collections, cheaper NFTs on places like Sol and Polygon. And it should just be one-stop shop to access all of it. And that's what we're building towards. So we're really pumped about it. Right now, like already, I think we're doing, obviously Blur is a little bigger than us, but you know, it's zero fee token dropped volume, right? A lot of the time. And if you look at Bitcoin volume is fully organic, because it's, you're not going to just like randomly trade things there. It's going to cost you to trade that, right? So it's extremely organic retail volume. And that's where I think a lot of people who feel like when they get into it for the first time, it feels like what Ethereum NFTs felt like in 2020. So that's why we're really excited about it.
You guys have made a big push on royalties, and there's the partnership you announced with Yuga Labs and the Creator Alliance. What's the what's the thought process there? You know, it's nice to actually see a marketplace that is caring about creators as well as just driving volumes and trades and stuff. But you know, what's the thought process behind there? Like, what made you guys take that path? It's a risky path to take, because it's, you know, in terms of price competition, you're putting yourselves out there. But yeah, just curious to hear like what the thoughts behind that were.
Yeah, for sure. A couple of things. One is that we fundamentally believe in any kind of creators is a very, very broad sort of category, right? But it is true that for NFTs to be very, very bullish over the long term, you need a lot of people who are going to experiment with this stuff. I need a lot of people who are going to try and create all kinds of different NFTs. And so we are in general supportive of like whatever incentives or anything that's going to actually incentivize creators, more creators to come do things, more people to try it out. We are always in support of that. So that's like the first principle kind of thing. Then we thought about it, and this royalty narrative royalty issue has been something that's existed for a while, obviously. But we've seen this go full cycle on Solana, because it actually first came about in 2022. Yeah, it was 22, around like Q3 of 22 or something, where Solana ecosystem went zero royalties. There's a whole kerfuffle about it, same as on ETH. But everything just transpired a little faster in true nature of the chain. And then what happened was we ended up helping with the consortium of people in the community to build like a new royalty enforcing standard. And if you go on Solana right now, it's everything is has royalties. You wouldn't know it, but everything does have royalties there. So we feel like this solution, that full circle movie, it's possible. We've seen it. It's possible to do. It just needs some people to stand up and be willing to do it, right? So yes, it's not going to be easy. I think we don't have all the solutions on day one, but us going out there saying we're going to try this, Yuga obviously being on board, wanting to do it as well, and subsequently the Creator Alliance that we announced last week, which the Wrecked guy, obviously very grateful for the support there. And the thesis is that we want to make this work because it's actually healing for the ecosystem, and it actually benefits everyone. It benefits obviously more creators, because that then creates a much more like diversified, like many more assets get created, more interesting market, et cetera, et cetera. And then for users, that's actually what users want, right? They want new content, they want new things to trade, they want new things to collect, like whatever. Like that's actually what's important. So we think that it's actually healing for the ecosystem. So that's what we're working on, and that's what we're launching on in a couple of weeks. It's a marketplace that supports creators. We are also doing a bunch of things to support users as well. It's not just like one-sided. You have to obviously look after both sides. But fundamentally, I think we are, we're not in the, we're not trying to just like forget about one-sided market. I think creators are actually pretty important. And that's why we wanted to do this. To your point, it's like, I do feel like sometimes we're like sticking our neck out a little bit. It's like, fuck, why are we making our lives kind of hard? But I do think that if you look at this over the long time horizon, we want to be on the right side of history. I think this is the right side of history. So we're going to give it a good crack. And we're pretty pumped to launch the marketplace. And we obviously have a lot of launch partners lined up who are going to be launching new collections, Launchpad on ETH. It's going to be a pretty exciting time, but I think it's going to be pretty reinvigorating for the market.
Yeah, it's good to see. I know it may feel like you guys are sticking your neck out, but it's also good to see that people are like thinking with their brains and actually sticking to principles and ideologies, and not just like, oh, we're going to make another marketplace and just do the same thing as everyone else and just, kill royalties just so we can like battle for that extra 1% of market share. Like, it's actually refreshing to see that there are people out there who care about this stuff, which I think is cool. I was curious, how did you guys come up with the name Magic Eden? Like, whose idea was that? Like, where did that stem from?
It's a good question. I'm gonna like embarrass maybe my co-founders a little bit with a little story. So hopefully they forgive me. But the original name of this company was actually not Magic Eden. And it's funny because I still have like the old email and like all this stuff. But the original name that we came up with was PETA, like PETA, PETA Bay. But that's when dangerous. You say that, don't ever say it too fast.
Yeah, PETA Bay doesn't sound like somewhere you want to visit. But maybe
it sounds terrible. I don't know. You don't want to discover what's there. It's terrible. But anyway, that was the original name. And we were like, shouldn't we? And then we like shopped it around and we got some feedback, exactly what KVM, exactly what you're saying. Yeah. And we were like, this is a non-starter. This doesn't work. So we actually then went to this like startup name generator, right? There's that website that just like, it just spits out random shit just to like jog our thinking on it, our creativity on it. And one of the things that came out was like Magic Den. And we were like, we kind of like magic, but den sounds a little bit seedy. Yeah, it sounds like a, like maybe like too much like a sex shop or something. So we're like, can't do that. But then we thought, I think it was Jack. I was like, maybe Eden. Like Eden, at least it invokes like some garden vibes, right? And we're like, Magic Eden, that actually works because then you can do a bunch of shit with magic. You can do some stuff with Eden, like you can kind of play on both of those. together it kind of invokes like a, it's almost like a mysterious, magical place where like cool things can be discovered. You know what I mean? Like and that's how we felt anyway about it. And then we really liked it. That's how we, then we stuck with it. That was it. Yeah. Yeah.
Dodge the bullet. Dodge the bullet.
Oh, dude, yeah, you tell me. That was, we wouldn't be anywhere near this if we stuck with that original name.
So we've heard a lot about the Magic Eden journey. What about, I love the pivot to maybe a little bit about being a founder, a crypto startup founder who's had found a ton of success. Like maybe a little bit about what you've learned along the way about being a founder, what you would do differently, anything you could touch on in that space.
I think two things. I'll start with like being a founder in crypto, then I'll just talk about being a founder in general. Being a founder in crypto, I mean, it's same for anyone who is in the space day to day, but I think it's especially true as a founder. It's kind of like you cannot get too far ahead of yourself when things are good, but you also cannot be too harsh on yourself when things are bad, right? And it's very easy to oscillate on the two extremes in crypto. And the reason I think that's actually really important as a founder in the space is because these are emotions that your team are going to have very naturally. Like, think about it, like we as a company, we really believe in like, like being close to the community, close to the ecosystem. So a lot of people that we've hired, we like met them on Discord or something, right? We like hired them off Twitter because they just love this space. But it means that they're riding the ups and downs of what's happening day to day, week to week, month to month. And you guys know that's like, but it's just it's so hard, right? It's tiring. Shit can be amazing one day and shit can be terrible the next day. And so being very level-headed there, I think is actually one of the most important characteristics. You gotta obviously like soak up the good times, but it's like, don't get too far ahead of yourself. Don't get too cocky because that, yeah, you fly too close to the sun, look what happens. We've seen it, right? FTX. You get too down on yourself. That's also, yeah, it's not good either because you got to have the conviction to survive through this like, over the long term. And you have to be kind to yourself across this whole journey because it's going to take a long time. Yeah, NFTs, man. It's like last 2 years, everyone's been shitting on NFTs, but it's okay. Like, but you got to have that conviction deep in yourself to keep it going and make sure the team feels that too. So that's something that I really feel like is important if you're going to start a company in crypto. Being a founder in general, I would say I've learned a lot about just like, yeah, company building. It's kind of like no different to, I think, people who start companies in other industries. But I'll say this, that, yeah, I've never run like a big team before Magic Eden, sort of learning a lot on the fly. And I think being a founder teaches you a lot of lessons about life in general, because so much of what you're doing is how you get the most out of the team that's around you. How do you motivate them? How do you get them excited when things are really hard? Or how do you get them really fired up to do something? And that is actually it's like a people problem at the end of the day, right? It's like really leveraging the resources around you to create and build something amazing. And that's like a people problem at the end of the day. It's like really similar to kind of like what coaches talk about when they coach like elite teams. We're here to build an elite team that can be very, very good for a long period of time. And that's it's a really hard thing to do. I always thought it's kind of like, let's push hard. Let's like work a lot, let's grind. And we're like, this will be amazing. But actually the best teams are the ones that can last the distance. And crypto is like that, you know, you got to be able to ride the cycles. That's why Coinbase is still around, you know, like a lot of people shat on Coinbase and I don't know, over the years, many times for like being too conservative or whatever. But if you look back on it all, it's like, man, what a business, what a killer business. Like they've absolutely crushed and I have huge respect for them. So anyway, those are some lessons. I don't know, maybe they're too vague or something, but yeah, those are some of the things that come to mind.
No, they made sense.
I think it's true. I think it's useful to have a team around you as well. Like, I can't imagine being a single founder in this space. Like, the mental toughness of going through cycles, right? If you're just there alone, it can be tough. Like, it's good to have people around. Like, it sounds like multiple co-founders there. So, like, some days you're just like, oh, fuck this. You know, like, oh, Solana's down at fucking 8. Like, ugh. Or, you know, it's just not, they're not good days. And you need that person telling you, yeah, this is gonna work out. Or like, oh, this is, you know, one more day, it'll turn around.
Yeah. I'll tell you guys one thing. This might have been like week two of starting the company or something. The founders, I can't remember what exactly was the prompt, but it started to feel real, you know, like things were kind of working. We were like, oh shit, like this is no longer like a side project. Like we can't just do this on like weekends or something anymore. It's like we have users and we like got to do this. And that was kind of the point where we were like, okay, we're like starting a company. And I remember we said to each other at the time, like, your problem is my problem. In that, not just, we're going to obviously encounter some crazy shit, like from a work perspective. And we have, yeah, shit like Balloonsville and like whatever, like name any crypto disaster. But at the same time, like, there will be stuff that we'll have challenges on in our personal lives, but like, we've got to help each other, you know? That's the only way you get through it. So I really, yeah, really grateful for my co-founders. And yeah, guys like Antonio who've done this as a sole founder, DYDX, killer. What an absolute killer. Huge, huge amount of respect. It's hard. So the way they've pulled that off is it's honestly amazing. Like huge kudos.
So maybe this, before we get into the final questions, like what are the main things you're looking forward to in the future of Magic Eden? Are you going to go into real world assets? What are the big things? Obviously there's this, I know you're not launching the token, it's alongside somebody else, but that's going to be over the next 12 months. You've got the new marketplace. What else should we be looking out for?
Yeah, a few things. One is we just launched our rewards program like a couple of weeks ago on Solana. It's on Solana right now, but it's going to be on the rest of our chains. So I would keep an eye out for that. It's like diamonds, effectively similar kind of program as people have seen for other things, but there's, I can't really share more, but there's definitely a lot more coming on this front. So I would definitely look out for that. The other thing we're pretty excited about is, we're really excited about like new token standards, like NFT token standards. And I say this like not in like a specific chain kind of way at all, because they're happening everywhere. Like I'll give you some examples, right? You guys would have seen the 404 stuff that just came out on ETH. Mm-hmm. And then like, yeah, a bunch of devs created like a DN 404 after that too. I don't know if these will take off, but like I'm excited about the experimentation. There's another one on Bitcoin coming out called Runes, which is sort of their fungible token standard, right? And we're excited about that as well. So I would say one, rewards, keep an eye out for it. Two is new standards, because I ultimately think that NFT proliferation is absolutely going to create more and more standards, more and more asset types, more and more experimentation around those asset types. And then the last one I would say is like, I know this has been one of those, like over said narratives in the last, I don't know, 4 years. So I'm always hesitant, but deep down, I still believe in, we're starting to see the beginnings of this finally with like, new content launching. It's like, I still am really bullish on games. I really am. And we have like a team in Magic Eden dedicated to working in the gaming space. Both Web3 teams that have been building shit for the last 2-3 years, but also new teams that have been coming into the space over the bear market. So these things really take time, but we're starting to see it now, like assets launching, they're launching their tokens, the games are coming live. That ecosystem is going to be one of those where it's like, it's suddenly here and then people are going to be like, oh, wow, how did that happen? So we're bullish on that. So those are the three I would say: rewards, new standards, games.
What a way to
what is going on in the chat?
I don't know what's going on in the chat.
Some, We're doing some ear rubs.
This gets a little bit rowdy towards the end of the show in general.
Yeah.
You get the gamblers coming in hard towards the end of the show. They're asking us to rub his rub his ears, it looks like.
Whoa, dude. Oh, Steph, are you going to give people what they want?
No ear up today. No ear up today.
Come on, OSF. Run the ear. Love that.
Oh, it just came. Okay. Should we go to the final questions?
Yeah, get into them.
You want to go OSF? You're asking the final question.
All right, we're gonna finish it off with the final question that we always end our shows with. What's your best advice on how not to get wrecked?
Always take profit early. But I don't know. Can I
terrible advice.
Can I say something? Like, I almost like disagree with that framing somewhat, because I do think that if you're going to play in this space, you almost got to get wrecked. You've got to get wrecked a little bit. Like, you got to get wrecked, because are you really in it if you haven't at least been wrecked like one or two times?
Yeah.
Like,
you're not in the weeds deep enough, probably.
Yeah. Like KBM was talking about, like, the BitMEX situation a few years ago. Yeah. Like, everyone sort of should have. I'm not saying like it's better or good to have that story, but it's almost like, yeah, it's like, do you guys remember, like, there was a thing for a while, like DGen score? I can't remember who built that, but I was like, oh yeah, it was fascinating because it showed you which protocols like rugged and which ones you were a part of. Right. Yeah. And that was almost like a badge of honor. I have huge respect for like getting wrecked a little bit, but yeah, take some profit.
Just got to make sure you come back from it. Always leave some.
Yeah. Don't be too greedy, but get wrecked
a little bit. Exactly. All right. So now we got the loot box spins. If you want to stick around, Rollbit's going to do some loot box spins alongside of us. We'll call out some names. We'll do a Twitter picker.